Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Sarah from the Fairfax Speaker Group in Wilmington, Delaware.
I'm going to do my best with this mic here. There we go. Okay. Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm definitely an alcoholic. And I always get very nervous when I speak, and I usually work my way through, but if I'm talking really fast, that's how I normally talk, so that doesn't stop. But I'll try. I'll try really hard to be aware to slow down my speech, because when I get enthusiastic about something, I tend to get really excited and talk really quickly. And I want to make sure I'm carrying the message, and that's really what I'm here to do today. So firstly, I just want to say thank you to Lauren. Even though I know Lauren isn't here, she is the one who asked me to be here. And I want to say thank you to Shay for such a lovely welcome. And turns out we know a lot of the same people, because when you're doing the deal in Alcoholics Anonymous, you tend to meet some of the same people. And I was blessed when I was broken and came back in the rooms, I would say, in December, but my actual sobriety date is November 4th, 2013. I met my sponsor, my first sponsor, about a month later, but that's my actual sobriety date. And, you know, I hear a lot of speakers qualify themselves with that, and it's important that I have it, because it bears witness. I was taught it bears witness to the fact that for this many days in a row, I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink or a drug. But the other part of that is, for me, is that, you know, am I treating my alcoholism today? Because really, I was also taught from the very, very beginning that when I came in here and I was broken, my sponsor said to me, this is a 24-hour program, Sarah, and when you go to bed tonight, it expires, and if you're blessed enough to wake up tomorrow, you can try again. So, you know, am I treating my alcoholism today? And this young woman, I didn't get your name, and I'm so sorry, said, you know, I came up from Wilmington, Delaware tonight. I want to thank all of you guys for being here, and I really want to thank my husband, Oliver, because he drove me up here in a really kind of interesting weather pattern, and there were accidents and all kinds of cool stuff happening on 476 all the way up through the state, and, you know, we made it on time, and just thank you for always driving me and being with me when I go and do this stuff, and thank you for helping all the men that you help. I have a home group. It is the Fairfax Speaker Meeting. And if you guys ever want a road trip down to where I live, Sunday nights in Wilmington, it's 7 to 8. And I'm the speaker. I'm in service to that meeting. And I do think we have amazing speakers since I picked them. And I hear people and I'm like, oh, like we have the best speakers. Like, oh, why do you say that? I'm like, because I ask them to come and I think they're amazing. And so, yeah, it's a good group. A lot of fun there. And I also have what I kind of refer to as my illegal home group, because it's not really my home group anymore, but I still go and act like I set up the chairs, and I'm still in service, and that's on Tuesday nights, Newport Big Book Breakdown, that's 7:30 to 8:30 if you guys ever want to come down. That's an amazing group too. Originally though, I'm from Philadelphia, and when I first got sober, it was in the greater Philadelphia area, and as you'll hear in my story, when I came back again into AA, I also got sober in the greater Philadelphia area. And, yeah, it's been a wild ride. Trying to think, oh, yeah, I have a sponsor. I should probably mention that. If you're new, it's a really important thing to get a sponsor. I will tell you how I got my first sponsor. And the one that I have now, she's extremely aware. She's my sponsor. I was on FaceTime with her today crying and basically telling her, if you tell me this situation is God's will, I'm done with everyone, including God. And she was very kind about it because I was extremely upset about something. And, you know, this is what we do in AA. Like, I show up and I follow some directions that I didn't write, and I become willing and I am accountable. And it doesn't really matter what I feel. It doesn't really matter what I think. I could be like, you know what, this weather's bad, I'm not going to that meeting. Anybody could go, a home group member could speak up there. And I was saying that to my husband. And, but I know despite how I feel, despite how I think today, I just, you know, take contrary action. I do the opposite. There's like a Seinfeld episode for people that even know what that show is. And like, it's like, do the opposite. And that's what I've learned to do today. I just do the opposite of what I would normally do. And usually things work out. So anyway, my sponsor, she's amazing, and I just, she knows she's my sponsor. She sponsors lots of other women. She has a sponsor, and then I, in turn, have the absolute honor and privilege of sponsoring other women. I mean, it's just probably the, if not the biggest joy of my sobriety, one of them. And I have a lot of different women that I sponsor. I have my Philly girls that I still meet with them because I moved to Delaware. about a year ago, and then I have the Women in Delaware, and then one of my sponsees, I'll just mention briefly, because I think it's cool, she moved to the Cayman Islands a couple months ago, so it's just sort of neat to see how God's plan just sort of unfolds, but I guess tonight I'll do my best to just describe what it was like for me, what happened, and what it's like now. So, you know, I always think it's funny when we talk about our childhoods a little bit, because I don't really think any factor in my childhood is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because once I start to drink, I have little to no control over the amount I take. You know, there's that page 44 in the big book. How I qualify people is I ask them those two questions. But I grew up in Philadelphia. We moved there when I was 3 and a half. And I did grow up in an alcoholic home, and again, that's not what makes me an alcoholic, but I did. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and my dad is the alcoholic, or is the alcoholic. Now there's three of us, so I guess we're all the alcoholics, but we multiply. My poor mother is all I can say. You know, I went to Catholic school. I have one younger brother. He's also in the rooms. And yeah, I mean, I just think for me, everything on paper looked fine. Like, my parents, you know, they were loving and kind as best they could be. It was alcoholic dysfunction. That's the best way I can describe that. A lot of don't think, don't feel, don't speak kind of stuff. But, I mean, I didn't want for anything materially, you know. And I did really well in school. I could fly under the radar. I could get along with anyone. But inside, it's almost like when people tell me, like, they'll be like, oh, you're such a laid-back speaker. Like, you're so relaxed. And I'm like, there's, like, D-Days going off inside. There's literally bombs going off. It's like Beirut in the 80s going off inside of me right now. And that's kind of like my childhood. You know, I could get in – I didn't get in trouble because I was, like, a goody-two-shoes kind of kid in a way. But I was always really nervous, and I was always, like, consumed with what other people think of me. And, like, some of my earliest memories are, like, one time I got sick when I was, like, 4 or 5, and, like, I was at this, like, ballet classes, and, like, I missed 2 lessons or something, and, like, because I didn't know what we were doing, I was, like, I refused to ever go back. Like, I had to know what we were doing. We weren't going back. Same thing with swimming lessons. I was, like, thinking about this the other day. I'm like, wow, this alcoholism, you know, I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, even as a little kid. You know, but you couldn't get me to see that then. I was just like, no, I just don't want to do that. Like, this just isn't for me, even though, like, I'm just absolutely terrified and paralyzed and crippled by fear. And didn't want to do things unless I was good at them. And I didn't want, you know, I cared a lot about what you think. And the only other example is, I remember when I was in, like, 2nd grade, I was so scared to, like, get in trouble at school because it was Catholic school, and I knew they couldn't hit us anymore, but, like, they were, like, still pretty bad. Like, at times, the nuns that I had, I was, like, really scared to get humiliated in class, so you always had to know the answer. So if I didn't know the answer, I'd pretend I knew the answer, or I'd make the answer up, and I'd convince you I was right. But this one day in class, I remember we were, like, doing some project, and I went ahead of the instructions, which, God forbid, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I can't follow the instructions. Like, you know, they're just laid out clear cut. And I'm like, no, I'm going to do my own thing. And then I looked down and I was like, oh no, this is completely wrong and I'm dead. So rather than say, hi sister, like, I messed up, I went ahead a little bit. I just was like, I'm so sick. And, like, I pretended I had to throw up and I was, like, running to the bathroom and she's, like, running after me and I was just making fake vomit sounds and she was so psyched I made it to the toilet. She just sent me to the nurse. But the moral of that story is I became very good friends with the school nurse who was of a different faith. And, like, I'd always be down in the nurse's office like, oh, Mrs. Zion, I have this. And, like, we were just pals. Like, I ended up, like, working for her over the summer 1 year. And, yeah, it was nuts. And I would go home sick a lot because I was just always afraid, you know. So I had, like, this nervous disposition. And that's the way I was all through grade school. I started drinking. Like, when I found alcohol, oh, and by the way, I should backtrack a minute. When I was in 6th grade, I was about 12 years old, yeah, my dad went to rehab for alcohol drugs, you know, for, like, whatever. And I'm like, okay, you're 12 years old. It's, like, the age where you just want to die if someone looks at you anyway. I'm just like, you can't look at me. Like, I just want to die. It's like puberty. You're like, oh, it's so gross. I hate everything and everyone, including me. So then my dad goes to rehab, and I'm like, really? Like, I just remember being so mad. Like, who does that? Like, who does that? And it was just, like, the level of shame I had about that. Meanwhile, I should probably mention,
Not that I can qualify neighborhoods as alcoholic, but I will. If God came down out of the sky and asked me to bet on a horse, I'd bet on the one that my neighborhood qualifies as alcoholic. We had a bar on the corner of our street, and I just remember, though, like, thinking, like, no one can know that my dad is an alcoholic and a drug addict, because that's just so shameful. Like, meanwhile, like, everybody's parents were alcoholics and drug addicts. I just didn't realize this for some bizarre reason. And I just remember being really mad, and that my mom started going to Al-Anon, and that I was forced to go to Alateen, which was the lamest thing you could have me do. But my mom would bribe me with books, because she's like, your brother's going to do what you do. So I'm like, oh, fine. And I love to read, and so I was like nerding out with that. I'm like, okay, so I'd go. So the reason I mention all this is because I was very aware of alcoholism at a young age, right? And I was very determined that that was never going to be me. Like, not that I thought, oh, I'm going to be an alcoholic now, but I was just like, who does that to their family? I will never be like you, you know, typical 12-year-old girl stuff. And I'm like, exactly like my dad. Like, I turned out exactly like my dad, only maybe 10 times worse, if there is such a thing. If you can compare it, which we're not supposed to, comparison's not spiritual, they tell us in here, but, you know, if I had to, again, like, if God decided that was legal, like, I would be worse. So in high school, again, still doing well and everything, but, like, inside, just feeling really just, like, I guess underneath it all, and it's just to kind of synopsisize the feeling, it's just who I am is not okay. I don't feel comfortable in my own skin. Like, I don't like myself. I pretty much hate myself, and I hate how I feel mostly. So when I start to drink, my first experience isn't, like, some white light, like, oh, like, this is amazing. It was more like, I'm the last man standing, all my girlfriends are down, and I'm like, oh, well, of course it's going to take me more. This is in my blood. That's an actual thought I had. Like, I'm like, it runs in my family. Like, I'm just thinking, like, we've got the Irish side, the French side, we've got the Eastern Europeans in there. Like, I'm just, like, alcoholic in my core. So, of course it takes me more. Which I guess it does, but, like, I'm, like, taking care of everyone. And every promise I made to myself about not drinking, I just loved what alcohol did for me. I was kind of like, oh, this is what it does for you, but I'm not going to still be like you. Like, I was like a weekend warrior, got my grades that I needed to get. One year, my mom and dad were like, you're not going to live down the shore with five other girls from another Catholic school. And I'm like, I have a job, and I'm a good kid, and it's my money. And I went, and like, I drank, like, oh, and these Irish guys lived downstairs from us. It was a mess. But it was great. I drank every night, just like I wanted to. Came back, finished senior year. And fast forward, you know, I drank that way all through my schooling, all through undergrad. And then, you know, what would start to happen would be in my early 20s. I'll say this for me. Like, my consequences are almost unilaterally internal consequences. Like, I have listened to a lot of speakers that go to detox and rehab and have jail, and I don't know why, mostly probably because I didn't drive a lot, but, like, mine were internal, right? So relationships would start to come apart a little bit, and my one ex-boyfriend's like, yeah, this is just too much. And I'm like, no, I'm gonna go to AA. It's fine. I'm going to go to AA. And he's all like, what's AA? And I'm like, all proud of myself that I know what that is. I mean, it's sick. But so I go to AA, and I'll never forget. I went to this one little meeting in Hatboro, Pennsylvania. I think there were about 12-ish people there, all men, and I swore they were all over 80. And they were all trying to direct me to a young person's meeting. And what my takeaway from that night was, they don't even want me at their meeting. And I didn't want to be there, so I was just like, they didn't even want me there. They were trying to tell me to go someplace else. Meanwhile, I didn't want to be there, and I wasn't going to sit there, and I was just like, no. So, you know, long story short, I promised I wouldn't drink anymore, and I ended up drinking, and that relationship fell apart. You know, and so I was like, maybe my next relationship will need to be with people that drink like me. Like, all my relationships after that were with people that drank like me. So I'd be like, oh, no, it's fine now. And I finally get to graduate school, where the consequences start to become more, a little more, I can't stop drinking. Like, I can't stop drinking. I have to go teach, and I can't stop drinking. And then, like, I graduate, I pass, I'm done, and I still can't stop drinking, and then I stop going to work. Okay, and then I'm living with someone, and, like, I don't have to work because that person's there, and it's just, like, long story short, I start to go a little mentally insane, and my aunt, who's in recovery, comes over and tells me that she hears that I've been doing drugs, and that my mom, and I'm like, how dare you? I remember being so self-righteous, too. I was like, oh, my God, and I'm doing lots of that, but I know this is A, so I'll keep it in the bottle, so I'm like, I only drink
Which, like, yeah, I drank, like, you would think the amount I drank was like I was doing drugs. But so anyway, long story short, I left. And I was like, you know what? I don't need you. This, you guys are the problem. I'm not the problem. Look, I got good grades. I'm just going to leave and get a job out west. I moved to Arizona, and I get a good job working in a Mexican restaurant, because that's what you do when you have a master's degree. You go and you work in a Mexican restaurant and, out in the desert. And, you know, I was living with my one aunt that's out there, and I started going to AA. I don't know. I was just like, I feel like maybe if I do this, it'll kind of be off my back a little. Like, I'm doing a good thing here. And I go, and everybody there, like, you guys were all smiling and super friendly, and I liked it a lot better. And this woman who described herself as an ex-hippie from San Francisco came up to me and said, we're going to get you a book. I was like, dude, I don't have any money. And she's like, no, I'm buying it for you. I was like, oh. And she bought me this actual, it's so cool, it's like my actual big book from back then that's now completely falling apart. And they say if your big book's falling apart, your life usually isn't. So hopefully that's true. Let's bank on that. I'll say this. That woman bought me this book. I read it. I cried because I finally was like, this is what's wrong with me. Like, I understand now. Like, what's wrong with me? I get it. Like, and then she wanted me to come to her house to do step work, which I thought sounded like a Jane Fonda 90s, 80s, like, step aerobics or something. And I was like, that's really creepy and no. Like, yeah, no, that I'm like, oh yeah, I'm busy. And then I just kept working at the Mexican restaurant and then like had a nervous breakdown and came back east and finally came into AA. And I thought, I guess I should try and do this. Like, let me just try and do this. And like, I found a sponsor and, I guess I'll divide this. I tell my story differently every time. God, I pray before I get up here. So whatever God needs me to say. So I get a sponsor. I get a home group. I'm at meetings every day. I remember on Christmas I made 4 meetings. One of them was an NA meeting because there was no more AA meetings and I just couldn't be around my family because I wasn't through steps. And I was like, ah, I'm going to drink. So she took me through these steps, not out of the big book. Some of it was out of the big book. Some of it wasn't out of the big book. But I went through steps. I had a spiritual experience. I loved God, AA, and every man and woman that ever helped me. Had sponsees. It was awesome. I celebrated a year. This was in 2008, and a little after that year, which was my initial, was 8-18-08. In October of 2009, because God's got jokes, right? God always has jokes. So I'm coming out of an AA meeting, and dude's coming out of going to the liquor store, and he hits me, and almost kills me. And I watched it, like, in slow motion, like, he was turning, I'm like, there's just, it's like, uh-oh, like, I'm in trouble, and he just slammed into me, and they had to pull me out of the jaws of life. I had a C2 fracture, broken ankle, bone, really, I was mangled, I was really mangled, and so, long story short, I relapsed, because they put me on all kinds of medication, even though I was screaming, I'm in recovery, don't you put me on blankety blank, and then, you know, they did, and little by slowly, I'll mention this, I would always say, meeting makers make it. Like, because I thought that I made it. Like, if I made a lot of meetings, like, no. I had a neck brace, a body brace, a foot boot, a walker, and they'd wheel me in. And I'd sit in the back row with my friend from work release. And and he and I both didn't make it. We were meeting makers, but we did not make it. I've driven him to detox many times since, and we're still good friends, but we did not make it. And I finally realized meeting makers make it. Means we make the meeting happen. Like, somebody had to tell me this, like, a couple years ago. We set up the chairs, the coffee. I was like, oh, okay. And I say that because if you're new and the message you're hearing is just don't drink and make a meeting, meeting makers make it, what I would say is just for today, I choose not to drink, not understanding what I suffer from at all. So I guess, like, what I'll say is I couldn't go back to my home group and tell them I picked up because I truly believed that I spat in the face of God, AA, and everyone that ever helped me. I thought I chose it. I had no idea what I suffered from. So I did, I guess, the next logical best thing you could do as an alcoholic if you can't go to your home group and you just got a lot of money in this car accident settlement. You just, you know, for me, I was like, well, the next thing you should do is move to Mexico, right? Because you can get sober anywhere. Isn't this amazing? AA's everywhere. I can get sober in the Yucatan Peninsula, the jungle, and yeah, God will provide. And I moved there by myself. With nowhere to live, everybody's like, I thought they were all overreacting. I was like, A+ for drama class, guys. Like, it's fine. And they're just like, what are you doing? So I moved there. And, like, come to find out, God does look out for drunks and little babies because it's, like, one of the highest human and sex trafficking areas in the world where I was living. And so I was down there bebopping around. I was about 20 pounds lighter. I was probably a little paler than I am now. Came back paler than when I went down. I would wear 80 proof sunblock. I had a parasol and a Jeep, and it was bright blue. And if that wasn't enough to let you know I was in town, kid, I had somebody paint. There was a whale painted on the side of my Jeep. This artist kid put a big whale on the Jeep. So in case you weren't sure, when I needed to roll in to buy alcohol, Cops Mexico version. Like, that's all I can say. It's like Cops Mexico. It was very bad. It got bad very quickly. I missed my flight back. When I finally, said I have to get home, and I finally made it here, and I would love to tell you that I just came right into the rooms of AA, but I had another year of alcoholic torture and suffering. Because the thing is that when I'm in active alcoholism, I am a slave to alcohol, and I go where it tells me to go, I go with whom it tells me to go with, I'm just doing what it tells me, and it's over when it says it's over. You know, what alcohol does for me is it just erases all the fear. All that stuff that I had as a kid, that I'm not okay, that I don't feel okay, I don't look okay, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not whatever enough, I'm just not enough. That stuff goes away with alcohol. And then, you know, when you take it away, and I treat it with some steps for a while, and it worked. But the thing is, I didn't know I was supposed to keep doing that. I didn't understand what I suffered from. I thought I made a choice. So when I finally came back into AA, and trust me, this was the very last place I ever wanted to come back to, I didn't want to come back. Where I came back, I couldn't go to the home group, right? So I went to this one meeting that I hated. It wasn't that little like man meeting. It's in Hatboro, but it wasn't too far away. And I'd be in there, and I hated it. And I didn't want you to look at me, and I didn't want to look at you. And I just felt so uncomfortable. And I was like a live wire in my seat. And I remember one day I was in my house, and I found a bottle there, and I didn't know that I had no idea it was there. And I was like, I'm gonna drink, and I was like freaking out. And I went to the meeting, and I put my hands up because I'd been praying and looking and listening for a while. Because the first time I was in AA, we're supposed to look for someone who has what we want. I'm supposed to have a sponsor who has what I want. So I'd like listen to women share, and I'm like, who seems kind of peaceful? Who seems like they may not want to kill their husband? Like, I don't know, like maybe she can help me. But this day, I made a beeline for the meeting. I put my hand up, and I was like, just for today, I don't want to drink. And I was like, it was on me. It was on me. And I'm not someone that can coast around a meeting very long. I couldn't do it the first time, and I couldn't do it this time. And this woman came up to me at the end of the meeting, and she said, you never have to feel that way again. And I just knew. And she's like, I'm going to take you through this book. I'm like, oh, I have that book. You know? And so she did. She took me through the big book, this very one. And what ended up happening was she was nothing like me on paper. You know, she was not like me. She was married. She had kids. She was from, like, just all these different things. And but she knew what I suffered from. And she met me where I was at. You know, she met me right where I was at. And so I would go to her house once a week for about an hour, and we would open up the big book. And she would read it to me line by line. And I would try to talk. And she'd go, shh. Because, like, once I start, you can't really get me to stop. Like, I don't like coming up here so much, which my sponsor would have my head if she knew I said that, because I'm not supposed to say that. But one-on-one, like, I'll call sponsees, and they're like, you're not getting me on the phone until I feel like you've, like, heard what you need to hear. Like, I hear them ordering dinner at the drive-thru. They're, like, doing the muffled mute button. Like, and then I'm like, hello? And you're like, it's 5:50, please. And I'm just like, they're ordering dinner. I'm like, okay, I'll let you go. I'm so sorry. You know? But she was like, shh. And we're going through this book. And I remember getting my mind blown. Like, I'm like, where was all of it? I had no idea about the stuff in here. I remember the first time I went through this book, the only time I went through it, that a sponsor took me through the first time, and she said, read the doctor's opinion, and if you tell me you understand it, then you're a liar. I was like, cool. And I read it, and I genuinely thought I understood it. I mean, and I guess she thought I did too, because she never explained any of it to me. I'm like, I don't know, maybe because I have a master's degree in words, like I use them a lot. She probably thought I got it. I don't know. I can tell you, and I don't mind dating myself either, that when I read Phenomenon of Craving, the first thing I thought was like, oh, LL Cool J, something like Phenomenon. Oh yeah, that's amazing. It means it's inextricably wonderful, like LL Cool J, Craving. Okay, yeah, I got it. And I'm like, that's what happens when I drink. LL Cool J comes out. Like, I don't even know what I was thinking. So nobody explained that to me. So she took me through and explained each word phenomenon has nothing to do with that amazing video from the 90s. Just saying, look it up, kids, if you haven't seen it, it'll blow your mind. And she's like, it means facts or experience. And I'm like, oh. And she explained to me that I have a mind that will take me back to the thing that's killing me. Despite sufficient reason, I should never drink again. I'll just say Mexico being one of them. And she explained when I drank, the phenomenon of craving happens. And that, like, unless I took spiritual action, I was going to do that for the rest of my life until I went insane and killed myself or got locked up, got wet brain, or somehow else died. I was like, oh, cool, this is fun. So, you know, she's like, yeah, you're basically faced with two choices. You can do that or you can do this, like drink till you die or go insane or do these steps. So I remember getting a really big resentment when I found all this out. Not that I had to do that, but then I was like, nobody showed me this before. I was like, what? How did I miss the memo? And then all of a sudden these thoughts came floating back in, like, big book meetings. Oh, that's so lame. I'd much rather talk about Bill sees it and like, we'll do a meeting on gratitude and resentment because I know I'm not the only angry alcoholic. Like, that's what I would do. And I had no idea. I was very heavy into fellowship. I loved the chair meetings. I was big in service, but I didn't understand this and I wasn't really relying. I wasn't doing the program as it's outlined in the big book. And maybe if I was, the same things would have happened. I don't know, because I would have had that phenomenon of craving. At least I will never know. But what I do know is that it's important for me to drive that fact home. That if you're going to go through this process, at least in my experience, get with someone that knows this work, because the program is the program. Like, there's three sides to that triangle. Like, the fellowship's one side, but I have to get recovered first, right? I have to go through this for today. So she starts taking me through, and I'll mention it. I was tapering off of Klonopin when I came in, and my old grand sponsor said, you can't take her through these steps because she won't have a spiritual experience. And I was like, show me where it says that in the blanky big book. Because I don't remember reading that passage, sister. And, you know, I'm like coming in a lawyer and everything. And she's like, don't worry, I'll still take you through. I'm not going to listen to what she says. I'm like, good. Shouldn't listen to that. That's crazy talk. So she's taking me through this. And, she explains to me the first step. She also says to me, Sarah, you believe in God so much that we don't have to go through agnostics. You don't even need that. And I was like, okay, I don't know what that means, but cool. And then we did a third step together, and she had me writing my inventory, right? So I'm writing my inventory, and I'm writing my resentments, my sex conduct, my fears. And then we go, and I go to share it. And we take however long, and she's like, you have to take the hour. So if you're new and you do your fifth step, you take an hour at the end. If you're not new, you already know. And I went to take my hour, and I took it, and it was what it was. And I remember thinking, I don't feel like I'm on a broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. But I got back to my house, and the thought came to me that God is everything, or God is nothing. What is your choice to be? Which, that's a line out of We Agnostics, and I hadn't read that part. So I was like, oh, I guess God's everything. So I took my Klonopin, and I flushed it down the toilet. Didn't tell anybody about it for like a week, because I thought, I don't want anyone to worry, I might have a seizure. Don't do that. Don't try this at home, kid. That was like the dumbest thing I could do, really. Oh, and I should mention, too, like, I just detoxed myself. When I came back in the rooms, I'm going to backtrack for a minute. I was physically separated by the grace of God. Like, it wasn't me. Like, any time I wanted to stop that whole last year of alcoholic torture, it was like, oh, tomorrow. I'll just drink this today, but tomorrow I'll stop. Tomorrow will be the day, tomorrow never comes. And then one day, it was like, I just couldn't do it anymore, and I just took everything and dumped it and flushed it. And I just said, okay, well, I'm not going to go to rehab or detox. I don't have insurance. And I just, like, detoxed myself, which if you've done that, it's not a good idea. It's not really safe, and it's really not fun. There's no comfort meds when you detox yourself. There's nothing. And, so anyway, I just wanted to mention that. So I flushed this other medication. And again, I'm not advocating for anyone to take or not take medicine. This is just my story, and this is what happened. So take it if you want. If not, that's cool, too. So I flushed it, and that next week, it was bad. It was very bad. I couldn't, like, I remember thinking, like, okay, major decisions have to be made. Do I go in Walgreens, Rite Aid, or CVS? Where do I have the least likely chance I have to interact with anyone? Like, I can't talk to people right now, man. Like, oh my God, fear prayer to go into a Starbucks. Fear prayer 3 times I tried to go in Starbucks. Couldn't go in. Finally, I go in. And I'm walking up, and the guy, the barista, has an Irish brogue. And I'm like, I have no idea what he's saying to me. What's he saying to me? Is he hitting on me? I don't know. Is he hitting? I don't know what he's saying. And I walk out and I get in my car crying. That's me without alcohol and interacting with you. That's me interacting with people without these steps. I'm going to say cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. That's an understatement. So it's like I can't interact with people because I'm so full of fear. So, you know, I told my sponsor that little story. She was laughing. And but I was like, no, man, it's not funny. Like, how am I supposed to do life if this is what I'm like? So after that week, I started to settle down a little bit. You know, after I got all that stuff out of my system, I just kept going through the steps, you know, and she would meet with me and I would go through 6 and 7, 8 and 9. I had a very, very long list of people that I had to make it right with, had to make amends to, my family. I mean, just, again, Mexico, and that's just like one very, like, graphic, larger-than-life example of how my alcoholism shows up. I robbed so many people of their peace of mind. I robbed people of money, too, but, like, mostly I robbed them of their peace of mind. And, you know, I was terrified. I think my least favorite thing in AA is making amends. Like, I don't know anybody that's in AA that's been like, no, man, amends are so fun. Like, I love making them. And, like, you might make 10 and get on fire. Like, I'm going to do more. But, like, it's like that doesn't last forever, at least not if you're me. And I hate making amends. Like, I just don't like doing it. And little by slowly, I start to do it. And I start to get free. And I start to make it right with my mom. I start to make it right with my father, with my brother, with, you know, one of the things that came out of that was I was and have been able to parent my niece when my brother was not able to do that. I've been able to go to parent-teacher. I've been able to go do homework with her, take her, teach her how to ride a bike, teach her how to all that stuff, and be there and put together stuff for Christmas. And, like, you know, I was able to do that. And just a funny sort of story, I think, you know. What was that? I was like, don't get scared. It's just a funny story. It's not a scary story. No. It sounded like a little squirrel crying in terror. That's what goes on here. Like, like, okay. Meanwhile, this is the window into my mind, hopefully treated, is, you know, I had a long list. I made a lot of amends. And years into AA, I started to feel like it was on me again. I started to feel like I could drink again. Like, I started to feel a little bit insane. And I had a new sponsor, and I said to her, I don't know what's going on with me. And she said, oh, well, let's go over some steps. And she said, well, do you have any outstanding amends? I was like, well, yeah, just said it, and I brought her this list, and there's like 40 names on it. She's like, dude, or was her dude? That's how she talks. Dude, you're dying of untreated alcoholism. I was like, okay. She's like, go make the approach, because like I honestly thought to make direct amends, like I had to save up money to fly to Mexico, because I had a lot of that whole Mexico group. There's a lot of people down there that I harm. So like the Mexicans just had to wait until I got the cash, right? So she's like, stop. She's like, go get WhatsApp, right? Blanketing. She swore a lot. I won't do that here because I was asked not to, but she's like every other word, F-bomb. She's like, you call them right now. You get on WhatsApp. You get on Facebook. So I started doing that and I got free. And then I had more people and I said, I don't understand. Like, no one's calling me back. Like, no one's writing me back because I'm finding people on Facebook. And like, when I sponsor these now, they'll be like, oh, I can't find people. I'm like, I'll find them for you. Let's see, look at that. I'll stalk that. I'll be on Instagram. I found someone on Instagram. Like, I can find anyone. Don't try to tell me you can't find the people you owe the events to. So I'm like, well, I'm reaching out to everyone, but they're not writing me back. She's like, well, what is it that you're saying? I'm like, well, I'm like, it's been many moons since I've last seen you. And she's like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah. And my friend Nate always jokes, he's like, you sound like you're writing a Civil War letter, like, my dear Sean, we haven't had food in a fortnight. Like, and I'm like, shut up, Nate. Just shut up. Like, I didn't know how to write it in things. Like, it's been a long time. Like, I was trying to be cute about it. And she's like, no. They have, think about the taste they have in their mouth of you. That last interaction, I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe not the right approach. So if you're new, just word to the wise. This is how I now make the approach when it's, like, through social media. Hi. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so that I never find it necessary to pick up a drink again, I owe you a very huge amends, and I was wondering if you'd be willing to allow me to make it. Then I got responses, and I had one person write me back, who was like my high school theater mentor, say, I too am a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just celebrated 20-something years, and you can cross me off your 9-step list, because you don't owe me anything. I was like, but I do, but I do. And I tried to, you know, give him this money for something I'd borrowed money for. And he was like, listen, I'm going to tell you what my sponsor told me when I thought I had made all my amends. He's like, what about the people you couldn't find, the people who wouldn't see you, or the people who passed on? He's like, listen, you can go and you do something secret in my name, and that's how you can make it right with me. sounds really cool. And I was like, okay. And so there's always ways I've found, like, in that step, not that I'm taking you a journey through the step, but I kind of am taking you on a journey through the steps because this is what happened. And, you know, if you seek through the steps, you will find. And there's always a way to make an amends. And good sponsorship is essential. I've been blessed to have really good women sponsor me. Like amazing, amazing women. And, so yeah, I carried on with my amends and, learned to live in the disciplines of 10 and 11, which 10's hard. Like 10 I did today and I'm like crying and screaming at my sponsor, which isn't a normal thing. But I have a really serious family situation going on and it's probably the thing that terrifies me more in this world than anything else. So for me to like call her and just say what I said is a pretty good thing for someone like me because I'm the type of person that just leaves under far, far less. Like I'll just get in the car and go. I get on a plane and go. Like I don't just go a little bit. Like I go and I go now. Like if we're speeding 90 miles an hour on the AC expressway, I try to jump out of the car. Like literally, that's what I do. We're at a party. We're drinking. I'm not drunk enough, so I've got to go hide or leave the party and like hide and like you think I left the party and just like sit there and watch that whole scene. Like everybody's got the search squad looking for me. That's what I do just to be amused, to amuse myself. It's sick. And, you know, I have to go and I have to go now. Like, that's part of my alcoholism is I can't deal with any of this. I gotta go. So I don't want to be driven by fear today. So I'm either driven by fear or I'm led by God. So as long as I am following this program to the best of my ability for today, I don't have to drink over anything. And I know that's true because I've lived through some tragic things. You know, there's been death and there's been, like, crazy things with the court system and trying to keep my niece safe. And all kinds of things, but this program never fails. So I'll just end with the next little segment being the 12th step, which is my, I don't want to say favorite step. I always talk about 10, but we're not at a workshop, so I won't harp on it. All I'll say is that I'm supposed to, my sponsor now has got a French accent, she's very funny, and she'll tell me that I'm supposed to look for my selfishness, my dishonesty, you know, my fear, my self-pity, all that stuff. There's, you know, four things, whatever. So she says, we're supposed to watch it like a hawk. She goes, we watch like a hawk. This is what she does. Like, so I'm like, she's like, I see you coming. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, and she'll tell me, like, I have to watch it like a hawk. And like, for me, it's more like, I'm not so gracious or elegant. I'm like, no, it's like whack-a-mole, dude. Like, I gotta whack, it's coming up. Like, I whack it back down. And, like today when it happened, I freaked out. I asked God to take it. I told my sponsor about it. And then I looked for people I could help. This is not how I operate. I'm just literally like drinking. I'm just literally like, where can I go to hide? Like, where can I go to not feel? Because I can't handle my feelings. Alcohol handles and treats my feelings. Without alcohol, I need God. I need the steps. That's what I get. And my God, and I wasn't really that happy. She's like, read this page in the 12 and 12. Read this page in the 12 and 12. And I'm like, I don't want to read this page in the 12 and 12. So I'm reading the page in the 12 and 12, but I'm not liking it, you know. Reading it. Oh, God. Ask God in your meditation what you can do to help you. I'm like, oh, my, you know, like, and I'm mad about it. And then I do, but I do it. You know, like, I have a sponsee who, like, when I do this with my sponsees, like, one of them, oh, man, I was like, thank you for not hitting me right now. I can tell you really want to punch me in my face. And she's like a brawler. Girl, like, I was like, look, if I had to pick teams and we had to, like, do, like, celebrity deathmatch or, like, sponsor deathmatch, like, and we had a squad, you'd be on my squad because I know it'd be safe, but, like, right now you're facing me. Thank you for not hitting me. Because I'll have to tell her, like, oh, are you feeling selfish? I'm like, can we just, like, let's do it on the phone next time. And I'm like, next time, I'm just going to FaceTime you. And, but yeah, I love my sponsees, and they saved me, and the ones I talked to today saved me. My sponsor saves me. Really, it's God. God working through you guys. Being here tonight, knowing I had to be here tonight, saved me. Saved me. Because there's days where I'm just like, I don't know if I can make it. It just feels really heavy. You know, but if I follow some instructions, and for 1 minute, you know, I had to learn, like, classic Chris Brennan's gonna come channeling through, Shay. You know, when I'm thinking of you, I'm not thinking of me. Like, page 20. Like, I used to work in treatment, and I'd be on the detox unit with people. They probably wanted to hit me all the time, because they were detoxing, and I'd be like, ooh, you have a big book? Page 20 says, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we can help meet their needs. And I'd highlight their book, and I'd write out things in there and be like, you know, like, really? Who am I going to help here? I'm on a detox unit with 25 other people. I'm like, oh, wow, maybe not talk for 5 minutes and listen instead. I don't know. There's a thought. And they'd be like, oh, you're saucy. And I'd be like, yeah. And I'm sober. And here's how you do it, right, if you want to do it this way. And they'd be like, okay. And sometimes I see those people years later. I'm like, you wrote my book. you wrote fear and sex prayers in my book. I'm like, I did? And I'm like, I don't even remember. I was just like so on fire. I'd be like, I don't work for Horsham Clinic. I work for God. If they need to fire me. That's what I would say. And I'd do big book breakdowns. And I'm like, if you want to come, you can come. And the people would come. Because I still give them like, I mark them present. And I'm like, you don't really have to come. I'll still mark you present. And if you don't want to, if you can't manage not to talk, you can leave and I'll still be your friend. Like, and they would just stay. They probably had nothing better to do. I mean, like, it's, you're on a lockdown unit in a psych hospital. If I'm your best option on Saturday, maybe try the big book. I don't know. So, you know, I had the honor and privilege of sponsoring women who are exactly like me inside. It doesn't matter what their walk of life. It doesn't matter any of that. It's like we are drunks. Two drunks sitting down across from each other trying to find the truth. And I have one recently who's like, I'm like, you always, like this one sponsor I have is she just fights me on everything. I'll tell her to do stuff, she just fights me on everything. But I was taught recently, what's the sound of willingness? Okay. Oh, God. You know, and it's just like, she'll fight me, and I'm like, this girl's never going to do it. 2 weeks later, she's like, when I was meditating, I'm like, what? Like, she like acts like I'm like, you know, like murdering her with my request, and then she goes and does it. Like, she will always fight me, but she always does it. So I have sponsees that are like, I can't find someone to help. I was like, really? Well, my one sponsee's on house arrest, and she found someone, so I don't really know. I don't really know. And this is the girl that fights me on everything. She fights me on everything. And she's up on house arrest, but they let her go do her job, and she's got somebody in the kitchen there, and she starts taking them through the big book, through the steps without the big book, because she knows what the steps are, right? So it's like, okay, like, God's going to find a way if you're willing, right? So one of the stories I always tell about sponsoring, though, that particular woman, you know, she left stuff off her fifth step, and she went back out and almost died twice. And then finally we sat down, and she got honest with me, and she was still lying. And I said, is that everything? She's like, yeah. I was like, dude, I know you're lying, but maybe when you're ready, and she's like, all right, fine. And then she told me, and now, like, you know, she's been sober ever since, and, like, finding people on house arrest to work with. Don't ask me. I'm responsible for the effort, not the outcome. And if you had, again, I don't know what's with my gambling, like, analogies tonight, but I forgive me, everyone. You know, if God said to me, you would, like, pick who's going to do this, like, if I watch these women that I start the journeying with, I would lose. That's a bet I would never win, because I think, oh, that one's never going to listen. Oh, this one, oh, she's yes man to me. Oh, yeah, look, nope, like, you just don't know. And here's an example, like, for me, I'm always like, you know, working with others, working with others, working with others, the 12th step, like carrying the message, like this is how we stay sober. They didn't have the big book. Bill and Bob didn't have the big book in the beginning. They had language of the heart, sitting down, too drunk, again, trying to find the truth. Like Bill and Bob style, that stuff, guys. Right? So I had a sponsee living in Trenton, New Jersey, and I had moved to Wilmington, but I was schlepping up because I started that, and I didn't want her to die. Really, is really what it came down to, because nobody, for some reason, she couldn't find someone to help her up there, so I'd drive up. And we finally get to the 12th step, and we're at a Dunkin' Donuts, and she's telling me how she can't help anyone. And I'm about to break the book down, and she's like, oh, but guess what? I have this brand new big book. And she starts to give it to me. Like, here, it's for you. I'm like, no, dude, you need that. That's for you. Like, I have big books. I don't need that, but thank you. You need that for your sponsee. Oh, no, but I can't help anybody. I was like, all right, we're in a Trenton in the Dunkin' Donuts. And we're sitting there. I'm, like, breaking down the 12th step, and all of a sudden I feel someone, like, staring at me. Not like you guys are looking at me right now, but like, say if Shay was over here, like, just that feeling. And I turn, and there's this little petite woman who's got this really cool, like, green Gucci bag. I just remember because it was, like, level with me where I was sitting, and she's like, excuse me, are you two reading the Bible? And I was like, no, ma'am, we're not reading the Bible. Actually, we're reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she's like, oh, wow, how attractive. And in my mind, I'm like, attraction, not promotion. Like, and this is literally what's going on in my mind, just so you know. And I'm like, okay. And she comes over and she starts crying. She just breaks down. She's one of us. She's in a relapse. She cannot stop drinking. She's freaking out. She's, you know, down on her luck or whatever. Down on her luck. She's drunk on herself in alcoholic despair and she has no money. So that's what we do. And I'm like, all right, listen, I'm going to get you your bagel and all this stuff. And she goes over for a second, and I turn to my sponsee, and I was like, can you help? Can maybe? And she's like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I go in and get her this, like, cream cheese and stuff, and I come and bring it back, and I'm like, okay, we've got the big book. I'm writing my number, my sponsee's number. I'm trying to get her to come to a meeting. I'm like, hey, you want to come to a meeting? She's like, oh, no, no, I've got a big day today. I'm like, you do? With what? She's like, well, with my cat. And I'm like, in my head, like, don't you judge her, Sarah. You didn't even have a cat when you came in here. You had nothing. So I was like, okay. So I didn't have a cat. So I was like trying not to. I'm like, oh, okay, the cat, big day with your cat. I gotcha. How about, you know, in the next couple days we could do it? And she kept saying, she kept talking to me about this cat. She's like, listen, my cat's name is Star. You know, I'm talking about Star in the Sky, Star in the Sky. Like, she was like, I'm like, yeah, yeah, Star in the Sky. And she's like, no, Star in the Sky. Then, you know what I mean? In this crazy world, we need that Star in the Sky. And I'm like, Star of David, Star of Bethlehem, oh, the Star then. Like, I'm like, okay, yeah. And I just, she was very emphatic that I understood what this star was about. And I was like, yeah. So then she informed me I didn't get the right cream cheese. And I was like, oh, okay. And she went to fix my error. And I turned to the sponsor. I said, do you think he could help her? She's crying. She literally lives a block away. She's like, yeah, I can help her. And I was just kind of amazed because I'm like, you know, I'm always trying to, like, arrange the show, as the big book says, you know, and I'm always like, if there's a new girl, I try to find the other new girl that's less time or what, doesn't know it, and try to put them together. And I'm like, you could never, I called my sponsor. I'm like, this is just wild. I was like, this, I'm like, it's like a stage play where we're sitting here. I'm like, the sponsee, like, walks in as we're doing the 12th step. I've never in my life had that. And, you know, then, like, hopefully they work it out. But I'm driving home, and I'm just kind of like, wow, God's amazing. You know, this is kind of powerful. And I'm driving home for, like, 2 hours in silence, which, if you ask my husband, is a spiritual experience. And he's probably hoping I have one tonight on our drive back down, when really what's going to be happening is, like, I should have said this, I should have said that. It's going to be me and the 30,000 other voices and him in the car, and he's just going to hear it and go, oh, that was amazing. you know, and I get home from working in Trenton and with the big book, and I go into this little room, and like I have a little book there that I didn't notice before, which I hadn't seen, and I was like, oh yeah, this is cool. It's like a little meditation book. My husband would love this book. I'm like, I'm gonna bring it out, and he can have it, and he'll read it and enjoy it. And I just open it up, and I swear to God, the page I open up to says, we must develop the power of the consciousness of the star in order to perform miracles. And I was like, oh my God. And I even get tears today because I'm like, this woman, and I'm like, don't ask me, but I'm like, and then I'm on the phone with the sponsee. You'll never believe what just happened, because like she was there. And I'm screenshotting it to her, and I'm like, it's this little meditation book, some like White Eagle Native American meditation book. And I'm like, what in the hell? Like, heck, heaven, sorry for swearing. And it's just like, wow, you know, that's the power of God. And my sponsor today will say, this is, and I called her, this is when we watch, we pause, and we watch God work. Because you could never orchestrate this if you tried. You know, and I have that little book, and it's on my little nightstand, or my little bureau area, and it's just like, every once in a while, I open it up, and I'm like, you know, this is what we're doing here. You know, I get to do this today. I get to, like, show up and be of service, and not think about all the things that, you know, I need to go this way, I need this to happen, I need the court to do this, the attorney to do this, the advocate to do that, I need the therapist to do this, my parents to do this, like, this is what I do. And then I'm in terror that something bad's gonna happen. And like, I have to manage it, and I can't breathe, and I can't breathe, and I'm having a panic attack today. This is today in my kitchen, and I'm texting this to people. And then they're like, you need to help someone. And I need to develop the power of the consciousness of the star, right? Which is I get still and I get quiet. Essentially, if you look that little book up and you look that little statement up, it is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in a nutshell. It's like, I've got to get out of the way of me long enough to let God come through, like Rob said. I hope he comes through with you tonight. I hope he comes through too, Rob, because I am not that funny and I'm not that interesting. And, you know, like, this is just, I'm a drunk. I'm a drunk who came in these rooms broken, dying, wanting to kill myself and too afraid to do it. And that's just the truth. Like, I wanted to die, but I couldn't actually do it. And I got my hand up, and some woman, and I know we're not supposed to say that people save our lives, but, like, really, they do. Like, God comes through, but, like, God can only come through if you're here. You know, like, God's great and God's amazing, and he can come through, I'm sure, like, you know, like, sprites, fairies, winged angels, and all kinds of crazy stuff on the snowy roads, and we can read books about that, the car breaks down, the invisible, you know, that's cool. Like, God comes to me without people, too. But, like, if I didn't have my sponsor walk up to me and hear how insane I was and hear how broken I was, and she didn't come up and put her hand out to me and put my hand in the hand of God, I wouldn't be here today. Like, I just wouldn't be here today. I don't believe that. I don't believe I had another hour, 2 hours, or 4 hours to just sit with that bottle in my house. You know, I had to have someone, some kind of hope that there was something different, that someone's going to help me. You know, so if you're new in here and you don't even know what I'm talking about, don't worry, I don't either. When I speak, it's almost like when I drink, it's like a blackout, you know, and one of my favorite comedians always says, like, blackout drinking is when your mind goes to sleep and your body gets all Eye of the Tiger on you. And I'm like, my body's not really Eye of the Tiger on me, I'm probably like sleeping the way back home, because it's like, that's just, the struggle's real. Like, I have to get up early, and I got up early today, and all I can say is that if you're new, stay. It's so much easier to just stay. And you're home, and there was someone here that can help you. And there's a teacher for everyone, you know, there's a teacher for everyone. And I'm going to end 3 minutes early because I feel inspired to stop. But once again, thank you guys for being here, and thank you for welcoming me.